A timeless bond, a trusted friendship, the two strong pillars of multipolarity in the world, India and Russia. Russian Ambassador to India, Mr. Denis Alipov, welcome to India, Russia and the world.
Thank you very much, Ranjan.
Mr. Alipov, how does Russia define its strategic relationship with India in this emerging but also very turbulent world order?
Let me first congratulate you on the launching of the dedicated RT India channel. The inauguration took place in December last year. As we know, President Putin participated in it. This is the first time I'm at your studio. It's been great to see the working of the people. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
As regards our relations with India, you know, we have been strategic partners. Last year, we marked 25 years of our special and strategic partnership. And for the whole period of Indian independence, we've been friends. We see our relations with India as one of the stabilizing factors on our common continent, the Eurasian continent, a factor for stability, a factor for peace, a factor for common security. We've both been great civilizations, two major countries in this part of the world and globally. And there is also China in this picture. That's why we are also a major civilization. That's why we have consistently advocated for the relaunch of the trilateral Russia-India-China mechanism. I think this mechanism is indispensable in securing the prosperity and the future of our continent and the world at large. But certainly there is no China in our bilateral picture. There's no Russia in India-China bilateral picture and in our relations with China. In trilateral format, I think the closer cooperation is necessary, and this is something that we aspire for.
I also want to talk to you about the chaos unfolding in West Asia. The conflict has hit the region after the targeted killing of the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, by U.S.-Israeli strikes. In Moscow's view, does this really break down the traditional rules of a conflict?
You know, many rules have been broken lately. And developments in the Middle East against Iran has shown a blatant violation of the international norms and laws. It has been a violent aggression, an unbased aggression against a sovereign country. Before that, you know, a midnight snatching of a legitimate president of an independent country happened in Venezuela.
Right.
Preempting possible questions from the audience, I would like to stress that our decisions on Ukraine have been completely different. We acted in accordance with the international law. Those independent republics at that time, independent republics, approached Russia for support.
Right.
And we gave that support, reacted to the those requests. And that was completely within the international law and international norms, and this is the core difference that we from what we watch now in the Middle East and other parts of the world on the part of the U.S. actions and Israel actions. against Iran. The hostilities should stop at the earliest so that we will have stability and predictability in the Middle East.
Post the conflict in West Asia started, there are several statements made by Washington. I'm quoting U.S. Treasury Secretary here. To ease the temporary gap of oil around the world, we have given permissions to India to accept Russian oil. Now, they basically say that this is a waiver of sorts which is given to India to buy Russian oil for a month. How do you view this statement by Washington in terms of the wording that they have used?
The words were very indicative of the attitude the US has. I think a reply has been already given by the Indian officials. Minister Jaishankar responded to it. India doesn't require any permission from anybody. But such attitude on the part of the U.S. Shows the thinking it has, you know, the outlook it has towards its partners. I don't think the U.S. wants or sees anybody as partners. Junior partners at best, generally subordinates. And this has to be understood by everybody. With all the, you know, good intentions, the investments, good offices from the U.S. comes political conditions and pressure.
But has there been any increase in oil purchases after the so-called waiver that was granted by the U.S. to India?
You cannot exclude Russian oil from the global basket. The developments in the Middle East show that. Whether India buys Russian oil or somebody else, it will be there. The Russian oil will be there anyway. So India will only benefit from buying from us.
But will you say then that this particular situation has had the U.S. recognize that Russian energy remains quite indispensable in the global market supply then?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's indispensable. Otherwise,
has the U.S. recognized it?
Apparently it has. Mm-hmm. Apparently it has since there have been these statements and, you know, utterings from the U.S. officials.
There's Moscow that has now said that Russian LNG experts, they're saying that they could redirect from Europe to friendly markets in, say, India or China or Thailand. Is there any indication of that happening soon?
It may happen, yeah. I do confirm the Deputy Prime Minister Novak has been public on that, and actually we have always been open and have offered LNG supplies to India. Mm-hmm. And there were arrangements and contracts for that several years ago, but then those were disrupted by sanctions. We are ready to offer LNG supplies to India.
Ambassador, what would you say to those who are now saying that Russia is trying to benefit from the situation going on in West Asia?
We benefit from stability. We benefit from predictability in the energy markets. We call for an immediate cessation of hostilities and the aggression against Iran. This is from what we do benefit and will benefit. The price rise in the energy markets, we do receive higher revenues, but it may be short term the prices are going down already. There is no gain for anybody, Russia included, in the long run, or even in the short run, from what is happening in the Middle East. Nothing can justify the current actions against Iran.
Also, Ambassador, many argue, it's usually the critics, who say that Russia's diplomacy and trade with the Global South, particularly India, it is a result of the fallout with the West. And say when things become better, perhaps after the Ukrainian conflict is resolved, Russia could go back to the West. Is there any truth to that?
We never went back from the West. It was West which, you know, severed all kind of relations with us. But let me remind that our pivot towards Asia, and especially towards India, was not a consequence to the Ukrainian conflict. We did that pivot even 25 years ago, and it was declared at that time. And since then, we put India and our Asian partners on top of our international agenda. So there is no connection whatsoever with Ukraine. Certainly, there will be no going back on our priorities in Asia with Asian partners, with India in particular. This will not happen, even if we amend relations with our Western partners sometime in the future.
Many ask, what really is the backbone of the New Delhi-Moscow relationship? Is it limited to, say, energy and military? Or, of course, you know, a lot of people talk about India and Russia when Mr. Modi and Mr. Putin are meeting. There's just this bonhomie between the two leaders. But, you know, say during the Soviet times, there was, some say, a deeper connection. You know, there was literature, there was people to people. Do you think that India and Russia are losing that, or do they need to strengthen that?
You know, the disintegration of the Soviet Union triggered the reorganization of our ties. This is true. But we are doing our best to expand in all directions. Our relations have been very comprehensive, multidirectional, multifaceted, of friendly nature, strategic nature. Nature. We do have a lot of plans in the making. Some of them may not go public for certain reasons, but the work is going on. Relationship between the personal relationship between the leaders has been, I think, one of the oldest, if not the oldest. The prime minister and the president have known each other for at least since 2000.
Right.
When the Prime Minister was the Chief Minister of Gujarat still.
I also want to ask you, how does Moscow balance its deepening ties with Beijing while maintaining its very strong ties with New Delhi? Because there's a bit of a, you know, complication in this triangle, I would say.
There is no connection between our relations with China and our relations with India. But I see a lot of apprehension here about extensive and deep relations with China. We want the same of the kind with India. India has been a little more cautious than China in the current circumstances to do business with Russia. It should not be. There are a lot of ways and possibilities to do that, and we need to expand business connections, have a greater synergy between our industries. There's no China factor in our relations with India.
Would you say if the three countries came together, India, Russia and China, that would be beneficial for the world?
Absolutely. It will not only be beneficial, it will be a decisive factor. You know, in the formation of the multiple world order that we're talking about, which is an inevitable, such kind of cooperation would be beneficial to our three countries and to the world at large, both in terms of politics, in terms of security, but also in terms of business opportunities, the contribution to sustainable development, climate issues, AI development, you name it, you take it. This is what we want to happen in world politics.
And in your view, is it possible?
I think it is possible. There is we sense there is a lot of distrust between India and China. We would like to be helpful in rebuilding that trust. For the Russia-India-China triangle will be most helpful in that. But we do not impose ourselves, neither on India nor on China. But if there is a necessity, if there is a request from both of the countries, then we will certainly be ready to offer our services.
Also, Ambassador, as you know, India has gone ahead with additional purchases of Rafale jets. Does Moscow see this as a setback, perhaps, for the Su-57 pitch then?
The purchases of Rafale is a continuation of a long-pending acquisition plans India has had. There was a tender about maybe 15 years ago. It was a different tender, but then in which we participated, but then backed out. And then came another tender, and France with Rafale has come as a winner, as a front runner. From this point of view, you may say it is a setback. But frankly, Rafales and Su-57 are very different machines.
And that's what I was going to ask you next, that in your view, what does Su-57 offer to India that Rafale does not?
They are different machines. Su-57 is more towards the fifth generation fighters, fighter jets. More capabilities, diversified options and capabilities. But what stands us out is the readiness to provide the complete technology transfers. As I understand, the French do not offer that. We do the complete transfer of technologies. And this is, I think, should be regarded as a very important aspect, and there's a defining when we discuss future cooperation on Su-57.
And would Russia be willing to offer India capabilities and military equipment that are not shared with any other partners?
Yes, we are ready to do that, and I'll tell you more. We've been doing that already. So such discussions and such cooperation is going on.
Russian President Vladimir Putin's visit to India recently, it was very closely watched by the world. What sort of message does this warm body language between the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and the Russian President Vladimir Putin signal?
There has certainly been a very warm relationship between the two leaders. As I've said, I've known each other for a very long time. They trust each other. They understand each other. Both of them speak the same language when, they dwell upon our bilateral issues or discuss international affairs. It has been a very strong factor in our relations. But I don't think there is an intention, either of ours or India's intention, to send some kind of a signal to the world or to anybody, or warnings or messages. Our relations have been independent in nature, have been self-sustained. We work for that. The leaders do not meet with each other just to send any messages to anybody. They meet to discuss, the plans and projects that we have.
So it's not for the optics?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Also, Ambassador, this is the year of India's BRICS presidency. What are your expectations, A, from the BRICS summit that India will host? But also, can we expect President Vladimir Putin to come to India for the BRICS summit again this year?
Yes, we do expect President Putin to come for the BRICS summit later this year. There's going to be an elaborate calendar of BRICS events for this year during India's chairship, and we expect a lot from India as a chair in BRICS this year. The priorities have been announced. The agenda has been announced. The motto, building upon the sustainability, innovations, desecrating the BRICS acronym, the cooperation and stability. There is this people-centric approach emphasized by India. We will speak on about the reform of global governance institutions, terrorism combating, about the improvement of trade mechanisms, about the ways to boost investments. But we also are hopeful that our partners in BRICS and India's chair will also pay attention to decisions that were taken during our chairship in 2024, and also that all of us will take forward the decisions taken last year in Brazil. And I can mention such initiatives like the trans-border payment mechanisms, the grain exchange of BRICS, cooperation in the insurance sector, such kind of things. We must build upon the decisions that we've already taken and take forward those initiatives India has proposed.
There are critics who say that the expansion of BRICS has diluted its effectiveness.
It would be an exaggeration, certainly. BRICS expanded in 2024. The deliberations and the cooperation within BRICS is based on consensus. The more partners you have, the more difficult it is to reach a consensus. From this point of view, yes, it has become a little more complicated, but it does not in any way indicate that we do have some core contradictions between us. The discussions have become more lively, have become more practical. On some issues we differ, on some we agree. We only have gained from the expansion. It complicated the discussion process, but we have only gained because now BRICS constitutes the majority of those countries contributing to the global production. We represent the majority of population. This is an alliance to reckon with.
Ambassador Alipov, before I let you go, would you be ready for a quick rapid-fire round?
Oh, please.
Would you describe India in one word?
Obviously, the future.
The West in one word.
The West is the past in this comparison.
I like that. Multipolarity, is that ideal or is it an illusion?
Probably neither of those. It's the inevitability.
Biggest misconception that Indians have about Russians or Russia?
It's not a misconception. It's lack of enough knowledge about each other. Mm-hmm. Especially in business.
What is that one thing that Russia expects from India?
I would say strength. We want to see a strong India, and this is something we're going to see very soon.
All right, Ambassador Alipov, it truly has been a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Ranjan. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.